We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome into the Pod is the Roof, the official UNC basketball podcast of the Field of 68. I am your host, Riley Davis, joined as always by my co-host, Jacob Karabatsis. And today we have a very special guest. You may know him as the only member of the 2022-23 North Carolina Tar Heels to shoot 100% from beyond the arc. It's Jackson Watkins, former walk-on. Jackson, how you doing, man?
Pretty good. Thanks for having me. It's a very generous stat to throw my way in the intro, but I'm excited to be here. Excited to talk Carolina basketball.
Well, you know, I got to make sure people remember that because you did get UNC fans biscuits. Like, do you have any, is there an official statement on that? Is there anything that you want people to know? Like maybe an I'm him drop, something like that. Like, tell the people.
I'm that guy. No, I'll just say, like, I think this is in my Twitter bio, but I'm a really proud member of the two-time Biscuit Getter Club. We don't have a trademark yet on that name, and we don't have merch yet. But yeah, that's sort of that was my claim to fame, I guess.
I love to hear it. And, you know, before we get into the game breakdown, we are going to talk some about Carolina's win over Florida State, their 10th win in a row. We were just speaking off air. It feels like something we just expect these days for UNC to keep winning, even when they can win a little ugly, can win a little gritty. But Jackson, I first wanted to hear even how you ended up walking onto the team. Like, I know a little bit about the way Carolina does things with having JV players who try out and make the team and everything. What's your story with that?
Yeah, and we were talking about it, just a few minutes ago. But I think coming out of high school, I sort of had two options and two routes I was sort of thinking about. One of which was playing at a Division III school. You know, it was going to be a smaller school that, you know, maybe people didn't even know the name of. It would be fun playing, and it would definitely be a guaranteed spot. But I didn't know if I was fully committed to that route. And then on the other hand, I thought, you know, maybe I take my chances and come to Carolina and try out for the JV team and see if I can walk on. And fortunately enough, I think I sort of took a leap of faith and, you know, decided to go the big university route. Early on, a lot of people don't know this actually, but I started on the women's team, like playing on the scout team my freshman year. This was before JV tryouts. Mm-hmm. So that was really fun, like getting introduced to the program that way and still staying in shape and everything. And then JV tryouts rolled around. I tried out. I was one of three freshmen to make the team. It was myself, Dewey Ferris, and Rob Landry, who I think, here's a stat for you. I think we might be the first like JV class, like incoming class, to eventually all get pulled up. I haven't done my research, but I feel like that's pretty rare. So,
yeah,
and played well enough my freshman year to, you know, stand out on the JV team. Sophomore year, sort of through COVID, sort of threw a wrench in things. But then by the time junior year rolled around, I sort of committed to myself to stay in shape and be ready for any opportunity to walk on. And fortunately, got an opportunity to try out for 10 days and sort of just threw me into practice and made the team, and the rest is history. So,
Wow. So even thinking back to your freshman year, that was when Roy was still the head coach. So when you were on JV, were you were playing for Hubert as well?
No, actually, Coach Davis had coached the year before me, and then they had Coach Frederick coaching us my freshman year.
Gotcha.
So it was a really unique time. I was actually talking to my dad about this today. Like, I sort of came in at a very unique time where, I got to see Coach Williams sort of peripherally, being in the locker, like the JV locker room, being in the stadium, sort of getting to see sneak peeks of practice and stuff. And then by the time I walked on, Coach Davis is coming in, Coach Williams is leaving. Like, it was a pretty unique time in Carolina basketball. So it's cool to reflect that way.
Yeah, definitely a pivotal stretch. And even I know not playing under Hubert under JV, like on the JV team, still getting to be on his inaugural team and be part of that Final Four run, and even seeing the evolution of Frederick as well. I'm sure just like seeing him have that JV opportunity and, being retained on Hubert's staff has got to be pretty special. It's cool. You kind of have a unique spot in Carolina basketball history. So, but yeah,
Definitely.
let's get into the game a little bit from this past weekend. JK, haven't heard from you yet, man. How you doing?
I'm doing good, man. It's got some little bug or something going around. Throat's a little scratchy, so the voice is sounding a little raspier today, but we move forward. We're talking about UNC Dubs. We move, and that's all we know right now. So it's interesting, man. This team is It's just not like the past, say it every single episode, but when they were down by five at the half, I never once thought to myself, like, they're playing terrible, they've got 12 turnovers, FSU shooting 58% from three, like, we're cooked. We're gonna keep turning the ball over, they're gonna hit every single shot they take. It did have that feel in the first half, but then you look at the score and you're like, wait, they should be up like 15 right now. Like, they should have been killing us. But that's just this team, man. Like, even at their worst, they're finding ways to stay in games. They're finding ways, like, yeah, they had 12 turnovers, but they created eight. So it's like they made up for it a little bit there. They weren't really hitting shots in the first half. And then you're just kind of waiting. It's like I say, being a Patriots fan, it's like when I used to watch my beloved Tom Brady as the quarterback. Never, there's never enough. Like, doesn't matter. You could be down 14 with 3 minutes left. You're still like, we've got Tom Brady. It's kind of how this team feels. You could be down 10 with 4 minutes left and you have no worries.
Yeah, even when Florida State, I know Carolina pulled ahead by 10, I want to say around 7 or 8 minutes left in the game yesterday, Florida State was able to cut it down to two with maybe 3 minutes left. And I had this feeling, it's like, I just don't think UNC is going to lose this because we have RJ Davis. That was like honestly what it came down to. But Harrison Ingram has been making a ton of big plays. It was great to see Cadeau going yesterday as well. And really, probably the best game I think he's had since the Tennessee game. I thought he was really good again. I think it was NC State when he had like 11 and 6. But yeah, definitely a standout performance from him. But Jackson, when you look at this team, and obviously you were a part of this program and know some of the guys from last season, but what do you think that this squad does that they keep doing to extend this win streak? Like, what is it about this team to where they're able to, get key baskets and get critical stops and really stretch out a lead as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of things that are different, right? I mean, I think that's the beauty of sort of the state of college basketball right now is that every year seems to bring something new. But I'd say like we're defending at a really high level. I don't know the exact stat, but I think we've held opponents like 70 points or fewer, probably close to 10 games. I don't know if anybody has stats on that, but like I think last year, that's the biggest difference between last year and this year is that, we were going to have to score 90 points a game to have a chance at winning when we're letting up, 70, 80. So I feel like that's probably the biggest difference. And then sort of you add in the fact that we have, a lot of different pieces that can play their role and know their role, on offense. Like I think that's been playing to our advantage a lot. And that was really evident in Florida State. Like nobody panicked. When we went down, people knew what we had to do to claw our way back, focus just one possession at a time. And the outcome spoke for itself. So it was a really cool victory, and I think compared to last year, I think if we go down 5-7, that balloons to 15 pretty quickly. So it's really cool to see, our guys learning how to fight through adversity and fight to, win the game. So that's really cool on my end.
Yeah, you asked for the stat about holding opponents under 70. Carolina has held every conference opponent under 70 except Florida State, the first game, 78-70. The only other one to crack 70 was Louisville, oddly enough. And they're also the only team to score over a point or even to hit a point per possession from like a advanced stat efficiency margin, which is crazy that it was Louisville, the one team to do it. But yeah, I love that you brought up the defense. And this is honestly, Jackson, where I'd want to get some insight from you. So this is coming from my perspective. Like I'm not an X's and O's guru by any stretch. I try to watch a lot of games and break down what I see. But my at least to my untrained eye, I should say, it seemed like there was a change in defensive philosophy this year where there's just a lot more aggression, whether it's like hard hedging ball screens. I know they tried switching a lot of screens early on in the year, a lot more of heating up the ball, extending pressure when they need to. In some ways, it reminds me of how Carolina played in 2022 when it seemed like when the calendar turned to maybe late January, early February, there seemed to be this collective buy-in from the team where I go back to the UCLA game. And you had Brady Manek, who was seen as like this defensive liability by media folks alike the whole year, who he's hard hedging and like coming up with really crucial steals and just creating havoc where it's like, wow, where did this come from? Like, whereas last year, again, I'm not insulting last year's team or anything, but it just seemed like the scheme was maybe more conservative or more like Armando playing that drop coverage that teams could get easier shots on. Like, what have you seen, or what do you even know as far as different schematic shifts, or what you saw work in 2022 that this team's been able to replicate a little bit?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. And it's funny you bring up Brady sort of just creating havoc, because I remember there was one game where I don't even remember like what Brady was saying, but basically Coach Sully, he was just like, "Don't worry about what defense we're playing, just get in the way." And Brady was like, "Yep, that's all you gotta say." But no, I think this year, I mean, obviously I'm not in the locker room, like I don't know exactly what defenses we're playing against each opponent, but I think from my perspective, it looks like we're icing a lot of ball screens. I didn't know that terminology really coming in to the program, but it's basically where you don't even allow the guard to come off the screen. You just keep them, on the sideline. And in 2022, when we went on our run, we were icing everything. And I think when you keep the ball on one side of the floor, there's only so much you can do because there's so little space. And I think even if you have a really good guard who's crafty and you have a really good big rolling, like as long as you're bought in on the sort of weak side of the defense, you can help the roll. You can tag them when they're rolling. And with a guy like Mondo being active, around the ball screen, like I think he's an underrated defender in terms of like being active with his hands. I remember in practice, I'd come off a ball screen and he'd tap the ball away when I thought, he was back. Like, I think he is underrated in that perspective. But I also think we're switching a lot, which is helping us. Especially having guys like Cormack and Harrison, who are, skilled wings who can guard basically 1 through 4. It just makes life easier when you don't have to, if you're not guarding the 5 men, you're switching everything. It just makes life a lot easier for everybody. So I think ball screen coverage and, the fact that we're switching a lot, it seems like things are working.
Appreciate that insight, and I love what you said about Armando. JK, would you care to take the mic and make another case for Armando as ACC Defensive Player of the Year? Because,
Listen,
he had
I
another great
mean,
game defensively.
I just think that, like, I do think that the scheme has really just allowed him to, and I think, it's kind of like you said, not necessarily saying anything bad about last year's team, but I think it's a personnel thing that's allowing Armando to kind of almost roam. Like he's essentially roaming now, and he's able to impact every single shot at the rim. And it's first off, like a guy like Harrison, who's a dog, is just there switching everything. Cormac is there switching everything. And they've done a really good job of being quick on their switches to ensure that, like, if someone does get a mismatch size-wise with RJ or Cadeau, like, typically they're only letting the mismatch sit for like 4 seconds before they're either doubling to force it out, getting the switch when they pass it. Like, they're doing so many things, but Armando, he's probably not going to lead the ACC in blocks per game. But if we were to look at the advanced analytics here, the field goal percentage when Armando is contesting shots at the rim has to be extremely low. Like, if I had to guess, I'd say he's probably holding opponents to like low 30s. It might even be lower than that, but it's just making his life so much easier, man, because it's trust. Like, everything is trust. They're bought in. Like Jackson said, when you're bought in, that's when the defense clicks on all cylinders. And I just think every single one of them trust each other to be in the right spot right now. So Armando's not hesitating. When he sees something weak side that he can go contest or block, he's doing it because he trusts that Harrison's there or that Withers is there, that Cormac's there. So I really think that, like, it just comes down to trust. And if UNC continues this, say they finish with like one or two ACC losses, I'm going to stand by what we said last week. And it's they have to sweep the awards because RJ is 100% the player of the year. Hubert is 100% the coach of the year. And I'm sorry, like, you can give me all the stats you want about Dunn. Virginia is terrible. I'm not giving defensive player of the year to a team that's going to finish seventh in the conference. So, I mean, I don't know. Armando, I think people are just not watching the little things. I think you look at the box score and you're like, 5 points and four rebounds from Mondo. That's terrible. He doesn't have to do as much on offense this year. He's going to be there when he needs to be. Guarantee you he's going to be turned up on Saturday against Duke. Like, he'll be there when he needs to be there, but it's the little things. And this right now is 100% the best defensive version of Armando I've ever seen in his time at Carolina.
Yeah, it seems like he took it personally when people sort of forgot about him after Atlantis. I would guess I mean, he's always been a very honest, candid interview, like post game and stuff. Like, I would guess he would admit, like, yeah, he kind of got cooked by Eric Dixon, and since then just has become one of the better interior bigs in the country. I always thought he like kind of got an unfair rap when people like, I don't know, this is mainly just Carolina haters, Duke fans in my mentions trying to tell me he can't guard in space. When again, I always point them back to the 2022 title run when he guarded Jeremy Sochan, who was a lottery pick, like shut him down against Baylor, was switching on to Tiger Campbell like it was nothing against UCLA. We've known he's had this in his bag, but he's just ascended to another level. Yeah, to even give you a stat from yesterday, Jacob, I looked it up. Florida State shot 44% at the rim yesterday. That's not good. I think like probably the where you want to be is at least 60%. I don't, have the exact numbers in front of me, but I think both of y'all also touched on Harrison Ingram and sort of what he's been able to provide defensively as well. His evolution has been incredible, in my opinion, even going back to the start of the year where, we've known he had the physical tools. He's got like a probably close to a 7 foot wingspan, good frame, obviously, but the knock on him was his foot speed or his lack of explosiveness. But he's sort of become this maniacal defender as well. Like, he had that block from the weak side in clutch time. I can't remember who he blocked yesterday, but yeah, Jackson, what have you seen from Harrison on the defensive side and how he's helped this team ascend to one of the better defenses in the country?
Yeah, that's a really good point. I think early on, like, everybody was trying to figure out their role. But I think, like, pretty quickly we figured out that he was sort of the X factor, and I still think he is. And sort of to tie in, Mondo to Harrison, I think an overlooked part of Mondo's game is the attention he gets on the rebounding front, and that's opening up. Harrison probably leads our team in offensive rebounds, but if Mondo's not there, he doesn't, so Mondo sort of attracting two box outs in at times allows Harrison to get in there, get quick layups. But I'd say Harrison, he's not reliant on the three, but he can certainly knock down timely shots like he did yesterday. I think he started like 2 for 2, and those are some huge, huge threes. but he's also huge. I mean, he's a big guy. He can back down guards. I love that little jump hook. He's patient in the paint. And we like to call it the mush move, where you start at the 3-point line, take a couple of dribbles, just start backing your guy down. And he's a really good decision maker, out of that. And I think last year, like, Pete would do that move a lot, but we didn't necessarily get the best shot out of it or the best pass. So I think Harrison sort of brings that, not just physicality, but also IQ, that we, it's a patient player, and he knows when to make the right play and when to take the shot. So I think he adds a lot to this team, and especially on the leadership front. Like, it seems like he has a quick, or a short memory. Like, if a bad play happens, if he turns it over, he's, clapping, running back down the floor. My sister was at the, I have a twin sister, by the way, and she was at, God, what game? She was at, I think it was some blowout, and Harrison had that breakaway and just, like, completely whiffed the
Oh
dunk.
yeah, the Syracuse game.
Syracuse, yeah. And so he completely misses the dunk, and Jalen, like, scoops it up. But she remembers, like, seeing Harrison just run back down the floor with a big smile on his face. Like, it seems like that's just the type of guy he is. And I think that's what the team needs.
Yeah,
Yeah.
so we
Go
talked
ahead,
about
Jacob.
this last week. You brought it up. I don't know the numbers. I'm gonna have to figure this out on my own because I don't think there's a way to look this up. But I'm telling you, Harrison Ingram, when he has a mismatch and backs someone down to the block, it feels like with a smaller defender on him, he shoots like 80% on those jump hooks. He just doesn't miss. Like anytime I see them switch onto Harrison and he gets the ball and takes two dribbles, and he usually takes like a split second to feel. It's like you said, he's a great decision maker. The amount of times, and honestly, there's been a couple of them that are on him. There's been a couple that are on Armando, but there's even been a couple times where he gets that position and he goes up and tries to throw like one of those interior bullet passes to Mondo or like the dump downs over the top. He just has such a good feel, but I swear that he genuinely does not miss those shots. Like he just doesn't.
Yeah, he's been a ton of fun. Like I was pretty high on his addition when Carolina got him. To one extent, like there just weren't that many 6'6", 6'7" wings who could play the three or the four in the portal. Like most of those dudes who are good are in the NBA. I think it's been awesome to see Harrison kind of redefine his career, coming out of high school as a McDonald's All-American, who had a lot of NBA buzz even after his second year at Stanford. And I mean, I think he's going to get drafted, whether it's this year after his senior year. But you mentioned him smile, like getting back down on the court in a lighthearted situation. I kind of want to go the other way. And like, I kind of think he might be just a psycho on the court who like brings that edge out of the rest of the team. And if you like, again, I've only ever talked to him just after games and like post game interviews and stuff. Electric interview. Would love to get him on the pod sometime. But yeah, he's just like really easy to talk to and just super energetic all the time. Like he's doing that same laugh that he did after smoking a layup while being up 30. He's doing that when he's getting like foul calls. Like it just seems like this response that's like, I guess I already described him as maniacal, but those are the vibes I get from it. But I think there's like the way he carries himself on the court, the amount of like chirping he does, like just brings out an edge from this in the rest of his team. And I don't know. That's like he's been one of my favorite players to watch this year. Like
He
it's
did it on
nuts.
Saturday. Who was it that Armando was getting into it with?
Deontay Green.
Yes. And Harrison, it's funny because Harrison comes up and he's not like pissed. He's not like yelling. He literally just like sticks his arm out and then looks at Deontay and just starts like giggling. I'm like, dude, this man is an absolute, he's just on go at all times. He just started laughing. And I'm just like, yeah, see, you just don't mess with someone that's laughing in that
Yes,
situation.
dude. I'm sure we've all played against people like that. For me, it was in football in high school. Like the best running back I ever played against, he was like telling us good job and great tackle, like on the first series of the game, and like laughing when we contain him for a loss. And then he ended up rushing for probably like 250 yards on us. Like those types of dudes are just built differently.
They are. Like, he doesn't care. And the other thing I love too is that's just one situation, but anytime there's any sort of like scuffle, he's always the first person there. Like, he's not letting anything happen. But I just think I think that's the beauty of this team. Everyone has that stuff to them in different ways. Like, RJ's got that, like, undersized New York guard. Like, you can't mess with me. I'm tougher than you. You're not going to be able to stop me. Cormac, I don't even know. Like, Cormac just doesn't have fear. He just doesn't
He's got
care.
that New
He
York fear.
does.
He
And
really
then
does.
Cadeau, like, literally scares me because the way that Cadeau attacks the basket is crazy. But his quickness, I do want to solo this out a little bit, because that game
Yeah.
Saturday was special, and how good he's going to be come into February conference tournament time is scary. But, like, Jackson, do you think there is anyone, like, I haven't seen one yet, that can stop him from getting to his spot and getting downhill, because he just looks like he's in a completely different gear than everyone else.
Yeah, I think I actually tweeted that during the game. I was like, I have yet to see anybody, who can stay in front of Elliot. Like, I mean, I miss every part of playing. If I could still be playing, I would. But I feel like if I was still there practicing against him, he would make me fall every practice, trying to stay in front of him. But yeah, I mean, he was it was on full display on Saturday, and I think everybody sort of seen glimpses, but I think you see this steady rise of his impact on the game. And now he's really starting to take care of the ball, and also, I mean, that wraparound pass at NC State, like, now he's got a feel for the offense. He's probably seeing things a lot easier and stuff. So it's been really cool to see, and especially thinking he's supposed to be a senior in high school right now. I mean, that's just special right there. So
Who do Jackson, who do the guards primarily work with? Or maybe, I guess it could be, I know Elliot's talked about Marcus Paige a lot. I know he wasn't on staff last year, but what coaches do you think are, like, working with him the most?
yeah, I mean, with the guards, it was when we broke down by like guards or bigs, it was primarily Coach Fred or Coach Lebo. I mean, getting to learn from Coach Lebo was probably one of the coolest parts of my experience, just with how legendary of a player he was at Carolina. Like, just his knowledge of the game is special, and I think he's probably doing a really good job teaching Elliot, and I know Marcus is too. So yeah.
Yeah, with Lebo in particular, I mean, it doesn't have to be funny or entertaining necessarily. I'm just curious, like, any stories or, like, what he does that was so impactful for you to get to be coached by him, and even what you, if you had a guess, like, what could he be doing that, is helping Cadeau turn this corner to where, I mean, Cadeau said yesterday post game that the staff is running more sets to get him downhill and everything. I do think it helps when you just, I mean, you play a team like Florida State that's switching 1 through 5, and you just attack those switches. But yeah, what do you think is helping him get into the, like, basically be set up for success, and what he's learning from these coaches?
Yeah, I mean, these coaches are, the best in the game, the best in the business. Like, looking back on my time, I miss the players, like my teammates and everything. But right behind them, I miss the coaches. I was seeing them every day. They were teaching me a lot. Obviously, they gave me the opportunity to, walk on and be part of the team. And I think, getting to play, because we sort of broke it down by scout team, like, one of the assistant coaches would teach us, the opponent's plays, and then we'd play them against the starters and stuff. So that's where I realized, like, how well our coaches know ball. Like, I thought I knew basketball coming in, and like, I learned so much about, defensive schemes, offensive schemes, what types of shots to take on offense, what types of shots we want a team to take on defense. Like, they're just so knowledgeable, and they have so much experience, coaching, that I have full confidence that they're making every, necessary adjustment and trying to get the best they can out of each player. And I think we're sort of seeing that. Like, you want to break down each player's individual game and, improve their individual game. And I think when it comes to practice, that's where you're really trying to build up, your team's ability. So I think it's a mix of probably, getting the best out of each individual, but also making sure they know their role, making sure everybody meshes together. And I have full confidence that, they're taking advantage of everybody's skills and strengths.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
As you guys know by now, we've partnered with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for the listeners and the viewers of the Field of 68 each and every week of the college basketball season. We have a special offer that will be available starting on Tuesday, January 9th, and running through Monday, February 12th, the morning after Super Bowl 58. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, in honor of the big game, you can use the bonus code FIELD158 and you'll get $158 in free bets on your first wager with BetMGM, regardless of whether or not you win that first bet. Here's how you make it work. Download the BetMGM app. Sign up using the bonus code FIELD158. Deposit at least $5 and place your first wager on any game. You'll receive $158 in bonus bets regardless of the outcome of your bet. Just make sure that you use that bonus code FIELD158 when you sign up. And remember, BetMGM is now available under one wallet in select states. As a New Jersey resident, this is super convenient when I have to go cover games in New York or Philly, which happens quite a bit. When you cross state borders, you just log into your existing account and fire away. You don't have to create separate accounts in each state. It's easy, it's simple, it's clean. And most importantly, we have some fun stuff coming up for the heart of the college basketball season. Bet insurance tokens, college hoops odd boosts, and my favorite, a nice juicy parlay boost. So download the BetMGM app and sign up today. Field 158.
Yeah, just you talking about that and even different schemes you learned under coaches. I know I've been harping on this defense. I mean, JK and I have talked about this a lot really over the past month and a half. I can't get over the fact that this team was like 50th or 49th in defensive efficiency on KenPom after the UConn game. And they are fourth right now. Like, that is a monumental turnaround. I know players have talked a lot about Coach Sullivan and like his impact on the defense. Like, when you were playing, maybe it was Sullivan, who was like the coach who would get on y'all the most about defense? Like, who was the one who was amping you up the most to, you know, get out there and check somebody?
Yeah, Sully was huge. I mean, he wouldn't talk, you know, a lot, but when he talked, you know, everybody listened, and it was usually because you messed up. but I mean, I think offense is easy to fix. Like, you know, I don't know. Offense is easy to fix, and it doesn't tend to like win you games. At least that's what people say. So like, defensively, that's where everybody was really clued in. And like, okay, if we want to really win, it's going to have to start on the defensive end. So the hardest practices were always, you know, when we were sort of screwing up on the defensive end. And I think like Jack Emanuel, 2005 national champion, he was on staff, you know, when I played. And I actually, fun fact, I played with him on the women's scout team because he was an assistant for the women. So I sort of knew him coming in, which was awesome. And he would really get after the guys, because he could tell, you know, if you weren't giving 110%, and, you know, he'd call you out on it. So I think, yeah, like Sully and Jackie were definitely the big defensive guys, and Lebo as well, Coach Lebo.
Uh-huh. Yeah, you mentioning, okay, I gotta ask, this is gonna open up an old wound. home loss, Dean Dome against Duke last season. I think the final score was 63-59, or it was after one of the Duke losses. Jeremy Roach hit a go-ahead bucket off a ball screen, said something post-game about how, like, he knew that Carolina wasn't going to communicate. Was that, I'm guessing, like, that's obviously something the team hears. You know, no one's oblivious. We know players are on social media. They see that kind of stuff. Was that something that was addressed in practice? And was that one of those practices that was like, oh shoot, like Sullivan's about to get on us for this? Or
yeah, I don't know that. I mean, geez, yeah, I sort of forgot about that, honestly. But yeah, that, I mean, at that point in the season, that's sort of just how things were going. Like, it just felt like nothing, no, everybody was on a different page, it felt like. And obviously, I guess it was obvious enough for, you know, Roach, who's a great player, like, to take advantage of that. So I don't know. Like, yeah, I sort of forget the practice after that. Because for me personally, like, I, having started that game, like, it's all sort of a blur because I was just so pumped up on, like, adrenaline. Uh-huh. So I don't remember much from that game. But, yeah, I mean, that's sort of the annoying, like, that's why I hate Duke. I'll just
Hey, well, I can bring it up now because he's not going to be saying that after Saturday. And that's not me. I think UNC will win this upcoming Saturday against Duke. But even if Carolina loses, one thing is for sure, like, this team communicates on defense. They're locked in. They're synced in. It's awesome to watch. But, yeah, so we can go ahead. And I don't want to get to Duke quite yet because I do want to talk a little bit about Georgia Tech on Tuesday. JK, you got anything you're looking for out of this game? Georgia Tech is bad. But, I mean, they beat Duke once. They beat Clemson at Clemson. Like, they have some decent talent. It's they have dudes with pedigree.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's kind of the number one thing for me that I hope – there's two things I hope the guys use chips on their shoulder for this game. One, how historically bad UNC athletics is when they go to Atlanta. And two, that this team beat Duke and then hung with Duke. So if you can blow them out, it's like another slap in the face to be like, Duke, how did you guys lose to this team? They suck. But, I mean, the number one thing is – you have to prevent a Miles Kelly game from happening because that's the one blemish. And it's obviously been a lot better this year, but it did happen early on with Eric Dixon and stuff. UNC has had a tendency in the past to kind of give up big games to dudes. You know, we've talked about the L. Ellis games in the past. You know, you talk about the Dixon game. Just don't let Miles Kelly get going. I mean, realistically, this should be a blowout. And I mean, UNC is probably going to be what? On the road, 12.5, 13.5 point favorites. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a 9-11 Georgia Tech team. I just, you know, in the past, this is a game I would have worried about where I would have been like, okay, eventually the old woes are going to come through. But no, I'm past that with this team, man. I'm a believer. I think everything they're doing is legit. I think if any, yeah, they're bound to lose a game or two. Like, it's going to happen. But I think this is who they are. I think this is their identity. And, you know, I don't think there's going to be anything to worry about. I really don't. I just think, the ultimate key that we talk about on every podcast basis is that it's a different gravy when you can play defense. And, you know, like Jackson said, even last year, they pretty much knew they needed to score 90 if they wanted to catch it, if they wanted to get out of there with a win. This team's not thinking about that because in this team's mind, okay, we're cold from the field tonight. We'll give up 59, 60 points, still get out of there with a 12, 13 point win. I think that's just the difference, and I think that's why I'm fully bought in and don't have any worries. I think we're going to absolutely destroy Georgia Tech.
I think Carolina does end up winning pretty easily. I'm glad you mentioned Miles Kelly because people who don't follow ACC basketball don't know how good he is.
He's so good.
He's like the meme of the cat in the pet store where the guy says, I'm going to get you out of there. I'm like, Miles Kelly, please go play somewhere other than Georgia Tech like that. I think Damon Stoudemire will get it turned around at Tech. Like, he brought in some dudes with pedigree this year. Kawasi Reeves, a former four-star, like high four-star recruit, found Nathan George, their point guard out of nowhere. Kid was got him out of Canada And he's had a couple huge games. I think even Debo Coleman, he's not, I guess he's playing less this year. He's a former four-star guy. And then Bay Ndongo, who's had some big games from them as well. Another top 100 kid. Like, I think he'll be able to get it going, which will be good for the conference to, you know, maybe eventually Georgia Tech won't be stomping, or what's the phrase I'm looking for? Stomping Matt? Why is this phrase escaping? Y'all know what I'm talking about. but yeah, Jackson, is there anything you're looking to out of this game that you want to see from Carolina?
Yeah, I mean, I'm of the thinking that, you know, a win's a win. Like, as long as we can get out of there with a win, I'm happy. And I think, you know, for me, it was always like, and one thing that Carolina like taught me is that, like, if you're playing a team that's got nothing to lose, like, that can always be scary. And
yeah,
Georgia Tech certainly has nothing to lose, and a win against us would be like winning the national championship for them. Mm-hmm. So that's always something to, you know, at least think about. If you're not going to worry about it, like, at least, you know, think about it. But I think if we, you know, prepare just like any other game, I think we can go in there, take care of business, you know, as long as we're not looking, you know, too far in the future to Saturday.
Yeah, that was going to be my thing, is that's the more I think about it, that's the one thing that does scare me about this spot a little bit, is you do kind of look ahead to Duke, and it's, you know, it's at UNC. You want to win that one bad. You're on the road for this game. Who really cares? I really just think it comes down to, I think this team's so talented and so good at what they do that it might get ugly if they have that mindset. I still think they can squeak out a win, but I'm with you, man. I hope they prep. I hope they're not thinking about the Duke game on Saturday until Wednesday.
Hey, JK, we're talking to a former player here who just gave us a very typical don't look ahead type speech. We know the team's going to be
dying. Not Jackson player speaking on the pod.
No, I'll tell you, the last time I looked ahead was back in the fall during the football season, and we had just beaten Miami, and I went ahead and bought my plane ticket. Like, okay, I'm going to come back for the Duke homecoming weekend because we're playing Virginia, Georgia Tech, and Campbell, and those are going to be three wins. We're going to be like 8-0, 9-0 coming into the game. And what do? We lose to Virginia, lose to Virginia Tech. So, like, that's why I try not to look ahead.
It always happens. No, so that actually brings me to a question. Are you gonna pull up for any games this season?
Yeah.
Is it too hard?
I was at the Lehigh game back in November. Got to see the boy Rob bank in that three, which was electric. And then I went to the game in Charlotte against Oklahoma, which was a lot of fun. Went to the UConn game in Madison Square Garden since they were up here, which was really cool. Got to go out with a couple of the former players afterwards. Mm-hmm. Last week I was at the Wake game, so got to see RJ absolutely torch them, which was fun. And drum roll, please, I'll be there on Saturday for Duke.
Hey, I will be too. We should link up. Maybe we can do a little live reaction show. Hop on a Twitter space or something.
Yeah, for sure.
Dude, elite.
Do you think you're going to be I'm curious, like, I feel like Roy would talk about this his first year, the year we went to the national championship game, that it was stressful for him to watch Carolina play, and he never felt that when he was a coach. Is that, like, when you were on the team, did you ever feel stressed during the games, or, like, how's it feel compared to being a player versus being a spectator?
Yeah, I'll say, you know, growing up as a kid, like, I was the kid who was yelling at the TV, or, like, this is a funny story from the 2017 national championship. Every single game in March Madness, I had never watched with my twin sister. Like, we're really tight, but she was at practice or school, and we weren't in the same place. And it's the national championship game against Gonzaga, and I hear the door open. There's like 10 minutes left. Like, it's still a really close game. And I hear the door open, and it's her. And I, like, literally turn around and I yell, like, leave, like, go outside. And so while we won the national championship, she was just standing in the driveway. But she was bought in. I mean, talk about buying in. Like, she understood. And so anyway, that was
true sibling love. Did she go to Carolina too?
No, she went to Columbia up here in New York. But
jeez, smart.
Hey,
family.
She chose the right color scheme.
Yeah, I know. She loves to rock the baby blue. And she might, you know, I think she wants to teach down the road. Like I could see her teaching at Carolina because she loves Chapel Hill and everything. Mm-hmm. But in terms of like my perspective as a spectator to a player, I'm a very nervous and stressed out spectator. But while I was a player, I sort of always felt like we were gonna win or had a chance. And like the most riled up I would get would be like at a ref. Like it wouldn't be about how we were playing.
Yeah.
But now that I'm sort of on the other side, the first time back in the Dean Dome watching a game, I was like really sort of antsy and like I felt like I should be out there almost like I was late for work or something. But it's definitely different, but getting used to it.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Is there ever a moment where you watch where you're just, you see something go wrong on the court, timeout's called, then they show the huddle and one of the coaches, whether it be Hubert, whoever, is going crazy and you're thinking to yourself, well, I know what they're getting lit up for right now. I know what he's saying.
Yeah, no, definitely. And it was funny. I think it was the weight game, because we were down at halftime, like we should not have been down, and the guys come out with maybe 4:30 on the clock, and usually when you come out that early, that means it was a pretty brief pretty brief halftime message, which is always the most brutal. So I could tell they got a pretty stern talking to in that game, because if you're coming out with maybe a minute left, like, okay, you were talking about something constructive, and but they came out with 4 minutes left and I was like, yeah, they just got it.
It was funny, like, there, I can't remember if it was in the first half or the second half against Florida State, but it was after some mistake and they showed, I mean, it was maybe the most animated I've seen Hubert on the sidelines all year. I'm like, are we sure this dude never cusses? Because he looked so, I just don't know how you get that animated and that upset and just completely censor yourself. Like, I am a man of faith myself, but like, I have a hard time censoring myself when I'm like,
it's a skill. Like, I think it's a skill, because when I get angry, I don't remember what I say.
But yeah, I mean, I feel like we've gotten more fiery Hubert this year, which I love. Because obviously everybody goes back to the live action moment. I guess you didn't even hear that because you were at the game on the bench, but like with Hubert saying that at halftime. But yeah, I think a fired up Hubert is the best kind of Hubert.
I'm with that. Should we move into our final segment with our special guest here?
Yeah, you can lead this one, JK.
Okay, so at the end of every pod, play a little game, pay some respect to the program with a game we like to call Four Corners. So we're going to give you a couple categories here, and you're just going to give us your four answers. So number one, you are a biscuit boy. I was there for one of the biscuits, and I gladly rejoiced in my free biscuit. So that being said, what is your top four food items from Bojangles?
Oh, that's a good one. I mean, without having to say much, like number one's got to be biscuits, right? But
absolutely.
If I'm gonna, like, I don't know, the bacon, egg, and cheese biscuit specifically. I know that's not the deal, but like that sandwich is a piece of goodness that I really appreciate. And honestly, I don't go to Bojangles all that often, but I'd say like the regular biscuit, the Bowberry biscuit, the sweet tea, obviously.
Oh yeah.
I guess the bacon, egg, and cheese.
You're going bacon, egg, and cheese over Cajun filet?
Yeah, I haven't tried the Cajun filet.
Really?
I'm also a bacon, egg, and cheese advocate, I must admit.
I can't
I'm a
believe
big
I'm the only
breakfast
one
guy.
here. I'm the only one holding it down for the Cajun filet. Jackson, when you're here
Listen,
this weekend, you gotta.
I'll occasionally do a Cajun filet. I like to add, get the one with cheese, add a little bit of extra to it. But man, when they get the bacon crispy on the bacon, egg, and cheese, it really just hits different.
Yeah. Maybe I will try the Cajun filet though this weekend.
Get you a Cajun filet like either Saturday or Sunday morning. Actually, you ever go to Sunrise Biscuit in Chapel Hill?
Oh yeah, that's the
Okay.
spot.
So, 'cause I'm like, you don't need to go to Bojangles on Saturday. Get Sunrise Biscuit Kitchen instead if you're getting
Yeah.
biscuit.
My
The
roommate
Sunrise cinnamon roll hits every time.
my
I love Sunrise.
roommate and I would go like a lot of Sundays. Like we just go drive down, get a Sunday morning Sunrise biscuit. So yeah.
Yeah, we
Okay,
would.
so
I got one more. This is a fun one. I was torn between two, but so obviously the transfer portal is absolutely massive right now. Everyone's transferring in and out. So obviously, you wouldn't trade your time for UNC for anything. But if there was a walk-on transfer portal and you were there, what would be the four schools? It could be for any reason. It could be for environment. It could be for their gear, education, whatever. What would be the other four schools that you would go to besides UNC?
Dang, that's a really good one because like I would never think about that if you hadn't asked. Okay, I'd say in no particular order, but I'd say Texas is gonna be up there. I grew up in Austin until I was 8, 7 or 8. So like if the Longhorns are playing, I'll root for them as long as they're not playing the Heels. So I'd say Texas, and it's like a big school, so similar vibe to Carolina. Probably like UCLA. I toured out there, when I was in high school. I like toured the school, really like the campus. I like California, so and just a historic program. I'll tell you, never in a million years Duke or Kansas, so those are on the
Respect.
bottom of the list. The other two, maybe like, I feel like Villanova. Like, I don't like Villanova, but if I could go play for Jay Wright, like if I could have, like that would have been really, really cool.
He would have had you posting up other guards, inverting the offense. You would have had
that.
a lethal jump stop and pivot, like.
Yeah, Jalen Brunson would have taught me well. All right, last one, maybe like Oregon for like the gear and everything.
That was going to be the
Like,
guess for me. Like, I feel like Oregon would be in anyone's top four because the gear is just otherworldly.
I think, okay, as far as West Coast schools go, I think Arizona's gear is cooler. I think Arizona has some sick jerseys.
yeah,
Their
they do.
throwbacks are dope, and I bet Tucson would be cool. I've never been to Tucson or Eugene, but I would guess Tucson. Definitely less cold.
Probably.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking about it from like if you go to Oregon, you get all the player exclusive Jays,
Good point. I didn't think
and
about that.
now in the NIL era, you could sell them. You could probably make a smooth like 50 grand off player exclusives. So I mean, you're kind of getting an NIL back.
Jackson, what were the best Jays you got being on Carolina's team?
Definitely the PEs. Last year we got the one like the low ones, which honestly are like the most comfortable Jays. So those are probably my best. And then also like the cool gray 11s. What else? I mean there's a bunch. I have a closet in my mom's house that it's just floor to ceiling, like boxes. Like I'm a collector now.
Dang, that's sick.
Love
That's so
that.
dope.
I really want a man cave one day where I can just like put them up for on display and stuff. Like, I don't know.
All right, I got one final question that doesn't fit the Four Corners theme, but I gotta ask, like, what was the, well, maybe you could give me top four even, or just give me like one or two, like the best moments from that Final Four run in 2022.
God, it was, I tell people like that was the best month of my life by far. And I was actually telling my mom this, like it was only maybe 5 or 6 days, and it feels like, I mean, like in New Orleans, and it feels like a huge chapter of my life. And like when I reflect on my college experience, like those 5 days feel like they last a lifetime. But I'd say running, I'd say jumping over the bench to get onto the court after the buzzer went off against Duke was that was a special feeling. Because nobody knew what to do. We were just like running around on the court, celebrating. And then sort of just like some of the small moments, like we went to this really good barbecue spot. Actually, one of those hats up there is like from the shop. They, I guess we like rented out the back, so they gave us like t-shirts and hats and everything. And we had an afternoon there. The weather was perfect, and we were all just eating and playing cornhole. And I remember just thinking to myself, like, I can't believe I'm here, like about to play Duke in the Final Four. And, you know, that might, it was, I was definitely nervous at that point, but like, I didn't let that stop me from appreciating, you know, where we were. And then sort of a last note, which isn't like a happy note, but by any means, but I think one of the most memorable sort of moments was when we lost, and that same bench that I, you know, jumped over, I sort of fell over and crawled over, and just picking my guys up, like it was an uncomfortable and unhappy feeling, like pure disappointment. But at the end of the day, like I got to experience that with my teammates and with my coaches, and I wouldn't trade that for anything. And I think Big May said it the best in the locker room after that game. Like, nobody really knows it in the moment, and I still don't know why we lost, but there's some lesson to be learned from it. And I try and learn, or I try and, you know, keep that with me, you know, wherever I'm going. Like, you're not always going to win, but that's where you really realize it's more about the experience and who you're with. So I'd say like those three things were what I remember the most.
That was great, man. I appreciate you sharing all that. I love the way you put it. And I don't know, not to get too sentimental, but it's like you look back to that team, that's like there's probably kids around the triangle growing up, and that's the first Tar Heel team they fall in love with. You know, like that team, I just remember the day after on that Tuesday. It's like you can't even be mad as a fan, you know, what Carolina did. They, I mean, Armando, I know, couldn't even walk like that after the Duke game, and went out and played probably close to 30 minutes of basketball. And just the definition of leaving it, again, dropping a sports cliche here, but leaving it all out on the court. Going to be a fan favorite team for many, many, many years to come. So thanks again, Jackson, for being on tonight. We appreciate you making your first appearance on the Pod as a Roof. Hope to have you back on. But yeah, where can people find you on Twitter? And if you want to, feel free to push your own podcast as well.
Yeah, no, definitely. And thanks for having me on here. It's great to, you know, talk with you guys and talk Carolina hoops. You can follow me on IG at Jackson Watkins 30. That was my number. And Twitter, I think, I don't even know my handle, but I think it's like J Watkins 30 or something. And yeah, I started a podcast back in the fall a couple months ago. It's called The Biscuit Show. It's only me for now, but I try and, you know, give my takes and tell some stories along the way. So feel free to go check that out.
Appreciate you, man. I'm Riley Davis. This is Jacob Karabatsis next to me. We'll be here the rest of the week. We'll be on your feed talking all things Duke leading up to what is going to be the game of the week. You know, players can't look past Georgia Tech. As media, we have the luxury where we can, you know, gas up some other games. So, but we'll probably be back later in the week to talk a little bit of Georgia Tech, look ahead to the Duke game as well. So have a good one.